Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into a really significant piece of South African law. We've got excerpts from the Upgrading of Land Tenure Rights Act 1991, and our goal here is to quickly unpack what this act was trying to do. It seems like a huge effort to turn limited or temporary land rights into proper full ownership.
That's exactly it. And the act itself is pretty clear about its core mission right from the start. It states its purpose is to provide for the upgrading and conversion into ownership of certain rights granted in respect of land, for the transfer of tribal land in full ownership to tribes, and for matters connected therewith. So it's all about formalizing things, giving people full rights.
Okay, so let's dig into chapter one first.
Yeah.
That seems to deal with converting individual rights. And it looks like there were, two main ways this happened, depending on the type of right someone had?
Precisely. Two paths. If you held what the Act calls a Schedule I right, think things like established leaseholds, deeds of grant, quitrent, the sort of more secure holdings, those converted automatically into full ownership, just like that. Either when the Act kicked in, July 1991, or when a township register opened up. And importantly, ownership went solely to the person registered.
Right. And here's something that jumps out, a huge practical benefit for people affected by this. These automatic conversions, no transfer duty, no stamp duty, no fees for the paperwork at the deeds office. Section 2, subsection 2 makes that clear.
Absolutely. A massive barrier just removed, made the whole process much more accessible. Now, the other path was for Schedule 2 rights. These were often less secure, maybe things like a permission to occupy.
Okay, so not automatic for those.
No, not quite. For Schedule 2 rights, the holder had to actually submit a certificate of ownership to the deeds registry. But, and this is key, the Act gave these conversions the same financial break. No transfer duties, no fees. Again, Section 3, subsection 3 confirms that. It also streamlines some Deeds Act requirements.
This is where it gets really interesting, though, beyond just the mechanics of deeds and titles. The Act seems to actively remove discriminatory rules linked to the land itself.
Oh, absolutely. That's a profoundly important part. Sections 4 and 5 contain clauses that basically void any existing condition restricting the owner's right to sell, mortgage, or, deal with their land. But even more pointedly, it cancels any restriction on transferring the land or possessing it or using it based on, and I'm quoting roughly here, any person of a particular population or ethnic group.
Wow. So a direct legal strike against those kinds of restrictions.
Exactly. It aimed to ensure ownership meant full rights, regardless of ethnicity.
And to make that happen on the ground, Chapter 2 seems crucial. This looks like the big administrative push. Formalizing townships, getting proper surveys done, making sure the land registers were accurate. The minister could even appoint people just for that task, right? Section 8.
Yes, that highlights the sheer scale of the task. You couldn't just declare new rights. You had to map them, record them accurately. It was about making those legal changes physically real and defensible. Now, shifting gears slightly but connected is Chapter 3. This tackled tribal land, collective ownership. The Act explicitly gave tribes the legal standing, the capacity, to actually hold land in full ownership.
Which they might not have formally had before.
Precisely. And tribes could then ask the minister to transfer existing tribal land directly to the tribe in ownership. And again, crucially, Section 20, subsection 9, says these transfers were exempt from transfer duty and stamp duty.
Okay, but there was a catch, wasn't there? A restriction on this new tribal ownership.
A very significant one, yes. Section 19, subsection 2. For 10 years after acquiring the land this way, the tribe couldn't sell it, exchange it, or even donate it to anyone who wasn't a member of that tribe.
10 years. Unless a court agreed.
Unless a competent court gave consent. It was clearly designed as a protection, to prevent immediate disposal of communal land assets right after they were formally secured.
So putting it all together, this act was trying to do a lot. Redefine ownership for individuals, formalize townships, grant ownership to tribes, and explicitly scrap discriminatory land rules. It's quite comprehensive.
It really is. And it leaves us with a fascinating final thought, especially for you listening. Think about that 10-year restriction on selling tribal land under Section 19. It was meant to protect the community's newly formalized asset, but it also restricted the tribe's immediate economic freedom with that land. So the question is, in land reform, how do you balance protecting that collective heritage against the market freedoms of the new owners? It's a tension baked right into the act itself, and one that, it certainly didn't disappear in 1991.